The library proved to be a small, cozy room directly opposite the parlor. Gaunt ushered Hawk and Fisher in and lit two of the library's oil lamps with a wave of his hand. All four of the walls were lined with bookshelves, each packed with books of various shapes and sizes. The books were stacked neatly, though apparently according to size and shape as much as contents. There were two comfortable-looking chairs by the empty fireplace, and two other doors, one to the left and one to the right.
Where did those doors lead?
The door to your right leads to the kitchen. The door to your left leads to my private laboratory. That door is locked and shielded at all times.
Fine. This room should do nicely. I think we'll make a start with you, Sir Gaunt, if it's convenient.
Of course. But we'll need another chair.
He glanced at the library door and gestured sharply. The door swung open. Gaunt looked across the hall into the parlor. A chair came sliding out of the parlor, crossed the hall, and entered the library, and the door swung shut behind it. Gaunt carefully positioned the chair before the empty fireplace and sat down. Hawk and Fisher pulled up the other two chairs and sat facing him.
That was very impressive.
No, not really. Well, what do we do now? I've never been involved in a murder investigation before. What kind of things do you need to ask me?
Nothing too difficult. To start with, do you recognize this key?
He nodded to Fisher, who dug the key out of her pocket and handed it to Gaunt. The sorcerer looked at the key and then turned it over in his hand a few times.
It looks like one of mine. Is it the key to William's room?
That's what we want to know.
All the keys look the same to me. Since I live on my own most of the time, I don't have much use for the upstairs rooms. Usually I keep all my keys on one ring in the right order so that I can tell them apart. And now they've all been split up. Still, it shouldn't be too difficult to work out which key it is. Where did you find it?
In Blackstone's room. On the floor, not far from the door.
Gaunt looked at Hawk.
Then why ask me if this is William's key?
Because in a case like this, we need to be very sure of our facts. You can never tell what's going to turn out to be significant. Please, let me know when you're sure that's Blackstone's key. Now, Sir Gaunt, what did you do earlier this evening, after your guests had gone upstairs to change?
I went into the kitchen. The meal was almost ready. All I had to do was pour the soup into the bowls and baste the meat one last time. I did that, and then I thought I'd better check that the table was ready. I walked out into the hall, and that was when I sensed the murder.
Fisher leaned forward in her chair.
You sensed the murder?
Oh, yes. I didn't know what it was at the time. I just felt a disturbance in the house, as though something terrible had happened. I ran upstairs to check that my guests were all right, and that's when I found you preparing to cut down my door with an axe. You know the rest.
Yes. Tell me, Sir Gaunt, could anyone use a teleport spell in this house without you knowing?
A teleport? Certainly not. Such spells take a great deal of power and skill to bring off correctly. One small mistake in the arrival coordinates, and you'd have a very nasty accident. I can see what you're getting at, Captain Hawk, but there's no way the assassin could have teleported into William's room and out again. I have wards set up all over the house to prevent just such a thing. I have my enemies too, you know. Even I couldn't teleport in this house without first dismantling the wards.
I see. Perhaps we should discuss Counselor Blackstone's enemies. It's common knowledge he was unpopular in some quarters, but can you suggest any names? Especially anyone who would profit by his death.
There's no one in particular. There are any number of people in Haven who will breathe easier knowing that William is dead, but I can't think of anyone insane enough to murder William in my house. They must have known that I would take this as a personal insult.
I see your point.
There is one thing.
Gaunt hesitated. Hawk waited patiently. Gaunt looked at him steadily.
I really don't know if this is at all relevant. I feel rather foolish even mentioning it, but William had an argument recently with Adam Stalker. I don't know what it was about, but it must have been serious. They've hardly spoken to each other for weeks.
You did the right thing in telling us. I shouldn't think it means anything, but we'll check it out just in case. I think that's all for the moment, Sir Gaunt. You can rejoin the others in the parlor now. And please, tell the witch Visage we'd like to see her next.
Of course. I'll send her in.
Gaunt got to his feet and crossed to the door. It swung open before him. And then he hesitated in the doorway and looked back at Hawk.
What should I do about dinner?
Serve it if you like, but I think you'll find most people have lost their appetite.
Gaunt nodded and left. The door swung shut behind him. Hawk looked at Fisher.
How am I doing?
Not bad. Just the right mix of authority and politeness. Do you believe him about the anti-teleport wards?
Makes sense to me. Every sorcerer has his enemies. And again, it's something we can check with Visage. If there are such wards in the house, she should be able to detect them.
Good point. Now, what about the keys? Gaunt said there were no duplicates, but he could be lying. If he did have a duplicate, he could have easily have let himself in, killed Blackstone, and left again, locking the door after him.
No, I don't buy that. It's too obvious.
So what? Look, there's already one hole in his story. He said that during the time of the murder, he left the parlor with the guests and went into the kitchen. He poured out the soup and basted the meat and then had his premonition about Blackstone's death. It doesn't add up, Hawk. Between everyone leaving the parlor and us breaking down the door, there had to have been at least 15 to 20 minutes. I remember looking at the clock in the parlor. Now, it doesn't take that long to pour out some soup and baste a joint of meat. So, what else was he doing?
Another good point, but I still can't see Gaunt as the murderer. If he'd wanted to kill Blackstone, surely he would have found a more subtle way than to stab the man under his own roof. Remember the hook? 247 dead and nothing to connect any of them with Gaunt. The forensic magicians couldn't find a single shred of evidence against him, and it wasn't for want of trying. I think he injured their pride.
All right. I see what you mean.
Fisher stirred uneasily in her chair.
But it could just be misdirection, so that we wouldn't suspect him. Remember how Gaunt used his magic to move that chair without touching it? Perhaps he could use a knife the same way. Or open a lock, just as he opened and shut that door, just by looking at it. If by some chance we find proof that Gaunt is the murderer, we'd better watch ourselves. If we start getting too close to the truth, he might decide to do something subtle about us.
Great. Just great. This case is getting more fun by the minute.
The witch Visage came in. She shut the door quietly behind her and looked uncertainly from Fisher to Hawk. Hawk nodded at the empty chair, and Visage sank into it. Her face was still deathly pale, and she kept her eyes modestly downcast. Fisher looked at Hawk, then took the lead.
We need to ask you some questions.
Yes.
Where were you when Blackstone was killed?
In my room, I suppose. I don't know exactly when William died.
Gaunt said he sensed the killing. Are you saying that you didn't feel anything?
Yes. Gaunt is much more powerful than I'll ever be. He's a sorcerer.
All right, so you were in your room. Did anyone see you there?
No, I was alone.
So you can't prove you were in your room?
No.
Earlier this evening, you said you knew why Catherine Blackstone was acting strangely. But you didn't get around to telling us then. Tell us now.
Why don't you ask Bowman?
Fisher and Hogg glanced quickly at each other.
Why Bowman?
Visage smiled slightly. Her green eyes were very cold.
You must have seen him and Catherine together. They're not exactly subtle about it.
They do seem very friendly.
They've been lovers for at least 6 months. That's why she's always laughing and smiling. She's found another fool.
Did Blackstone know?
I don't think so. William could be very good at not seeing things he didn't want to.
How long have you been working for Blackstone?
4, 5 years. Since his first campaign in the Heights area. I protected him from magical threats. He's always had enemies. Good men always do.
You gave him the amulet he wore?
Yes. As long as he wore it, no magic could harm him.
You mentioned enemies. Can you give us any names?
Visage shook her head firmly.
William wasn't killed by an assassin. The only people in this house are Gaunt, his guests, and you. There is no one else I'd have known.
Are you sure?
Yes, at least. There is a part of this house that is closed to me. I can't see into it.
Where?
Fisher leaned forward. Visage looked at the left-hand door.
Gaunt's laboratory. It's surrounded by a very powerful shield. He's always been very jealous of his secrets.
Could someone be hiding in there?
Visage shook her head.
No one could have left that room without my knowing about it.
Then why mention the room?
Because it disturbs me.
For a moment, no one said anything. Visage's words seemed to hang on the air.
Gaunt said this house was warded against teleport spells. Is that true?
Of course. It was one of the first things I checked for when I entered the house. It's not unusual. All sorcerers have such protections. Why are you wasting time with all these questions? Edward Bowman killed William, isn't it obvious? Bowman wanted Catherine, and they both knew William would never agree to a divorce. It would have destroyed his political career.
That's an interesting theory, but we can't arrest a man without some kind of proof. For the time being, everyone is equally suspect.
Including me?
Yes.
I could never have harmed William.
Hawk studied her thoughtfully.
Earlier on, I saw Gaunt bring a chair into this room by magic. He just looked at it, and it moved. Could he have manipulated a knife in the same way?
Through a locked door, you mean?
She shook her head.
That kind of magic is simple enough, but it needs eye contact with the object to be moved.
All right. Could he have used that magic to pick the lock?
No. There are wards in this house to prevent such tamperings.
Of course. There would be. Damn.
I think that's all for the moment. Please wait in the parlor and ask Bowman to come in next.
Visage sat where she was and looked hotly at Hawk and Fisher.
You're not going to do anything, are you? Bowman's too important. He has influence. I'm warning you. I won't let him get away with this. I'll kill him first.
She jumped to her feet and hurried out of the library, slamming the door behind her. Fisher raised an eyebrow.
If she's prepared to kill one man, she might have killed another.
Right. There's a fire burning under that cool and quiet surface. She was obviously very fond of Blackstone. Maybe she was having an affair with him. It went sour. Perhaps she wanted him to divorce his wife and marry her, and he refused, so she killed him for revenge. Or maybe she wanted an affair, and he didn't, so she killed him out of injured pride.
That's reaching a bit, isn't it?
Hawk shrugged.
This early in the game, how can we tell?
No, it still doesn't feel right. If there were hard feelings between Blackstone and Visage, he'd hardly have kept her on as his bodyguard, would he? I mean, that's what her job amounted to. And anyway, Visage is a witch. If she wanted to kill someone, she wouldn't need a knife to do it. Unless she was trying to be misleading.
I think we've had this conversation before.
The door opened and Bowman came in. He smiled briefly and sat down in the empty chair without waiting to be asked. Hawk frowned slightly. For a man whose friend and employer had just been murdered, Bowman looked very composed. But then he always did.
You were Blackstone's right-hand man.
That's right.
Would you mind telling us where you were at the time of the murder?
I was in my room, changing for dinner.
Can anyone verify that?
Bowman looked at him steadily.
No.
So you don't really have an alibi?
Do I need one?
How long have you known William Blackstone?
7, 8 years.
How long have you known Catherine Blackstone?
About the same.
Fisher and Hawk looked at him silently, but his pleasant smile didn't waver. The silence dragged on.
Who do you think killed Blackstone?
He had a great many enemies.
Are you aware of the penalties for refusing to cooperate with the guard during an investigation?
Of course, I am doing my best to cooperate, Captain Fisher. I've answered every question you've asked me.
All right. That's all for now. Wait in the parlor with the others, and send in Dormant.
Bowman nodded briefly to both of them, rose unhurriedly to his feet, and left the library.
Politicians. Getting answers to questions is like pulling teeth. The trouble is, technically, he's in the right. He did answer all of our questions. We just didn't know the right questions to ask him. We can't come flat out and accuse him of bedding his employer's wife. Firstly, he'd deny it anyway. And secondly, if by some chance we were wrong, he'd have us thrown out of the guard.
Yeah, but there's no doubt in my mind. You saw them together. The way they were reacting to each other. It's as clear as the nose on his face. Ugh, I can't believe Blackstone didn't know, or at least suspect.
Well, you heard Visage. Perhaps he chose not to know. He couldn't risk a divorce, and Bowman was useful to him.
Only as long as Bowman was discreet about it. And in my experience, he's not very subtle when it comes to approaching women.
Hawk looked at her sharply.
Oh, yes? Do I take it he approached you somewhere this evening?
Yeah, I took care of it. I explained that I wasn't interested, and he went away.
Just like that?
Pretty much. Oh, I explained that you'd kill him slowly and painfully, and I did have my knife pressed against his gut, but...
Yeah, you've always been persuasive, Isabel.
Thank you. To get back to the subject, if Bowman had been indiscreet about his affair with Catherine, and Blackstone got to hear of it...
No man likes to believe the woman he loves doesn't love him anymore. Older man, younger woman, it's an old story. But even if Catherine and Bowman were having an affair, it doesn't mean they committed the murder. It's not proof.
No, but it is a motive. And Catherine was the one who came and told us that something must have happened to her husband.
Dormant came in. He hesitated in the doorway a moment, as though unsure of his reception, and then stepped quickly into the library and shut the door behind him. Hawk nodded curtly at the empty chair, and Dormant came forward and sank into it. His face was pale and drawn, and his movements were clumsy, as though some of the strength had gone out of him. But when he finally raised his head to look at Hawk, his mouth was firm and his eyes didn't waver.
Did you have much luck with Bowman?
Some.
I'd lay good odds he's already told you one lie. You asked him where he was at the time of the murder, and he sat alone in his room. Right? I thought so. He wasn't alone. I saw Catherine go into his room just after we all came upstairs to change. I was just leaving the bathroom. She didn't see me.
Thank you for telling us. We'll bear it in mind. Now, Sir Dormant, where were you at the time of the murder?
In my room.
Alone?
No. Visage was with me.
Hawk raised an eyebrow.
Now that's strange. She told us she was in her room, alone. Why should she lie to us about that?
She wants to protect me. I'm currently separated from my wife, but not yet divorced. The separation is far from amicable, and my dear wife would just love to find some scandal she could use as ammunition against me.
So, why are you telling us?
To prove I've nothing to hide.
You are Blackstone's political advisor. I've heard a lot about Blackstone's enemies, but so far nobody seems ready to actually name them. How about you?
It's no secret, Captain Hawk. There's Jeffrey Tobias. He used to represent the Heights in Council before William took his seat away from him at the last election. Then there's the DeWitt brothers. They stand to lose a lot of money if William's bill becomes law. They own property down in the docks. It's in a foul state, and they've neither the money nor the inclination to make the repairs the bill would require. There's Hugh Carnell, the leading conservative on the council, old and mean and hates change in general, and William's changes in particular. I could go on, but why bother? You said yourself earlier on that no one could have gotten to the house to kill William. The murderer has to be one of us.
That's true. But someone here could be in the pay of one of those enemies.
It's possible, I suppose.
Let's talk about Catherine and Bowman. Do you think they're capable of murder?
We're all capable of murder, providing we're pushed hard enough by something we want or fear. Edward Bowman has had years of being second in command to William, and he's always been ambitious. He knew Catherine would never leave William. She liked the money and the prestige too much, and in her own way, she was always fond of William, even though she was cheating on him.
Let's suppose for a moment that Bowman did kill Blackstone. Would Catherine have supported him in that? Or would he have to do it on his own and hope she never found out he was responsible?
I don't know. I'm not a mind reader. People can do strange things when they're in love.
What about the other guests? Is there anyone else in this house with a motive to kill Blackstone?
I don't know about motives. I know William quarreled recently with Adam Stalker.
Really? That's interesting. What did they quarrel about?
I don't know. I don't think anybody knows. Neither of them would talk about it. But it must have been pretty serious. William was very angry about it. I could tell.
Anything else you can tell us?
Not really. We all admired William. We all believed in him. And most of us liked him.
How did you feel about him?
William Blackstone was the bravest and finest man I ever met.
Thank you. That will be all for the moment. Please wait in the parlor with the others and send in Catherine Blackstone.
Dormant nodded and got to his feet. He left the room and closed the door without looking back.
He seemed very eager to lay the blame on Bowman. Almost too eager.
Yeah. I don't know about you, Hawk, but my head hurts. The more people we see, the more complicated and impossible this case gets. We've got more suspects than we can shake a stick at, and we still haven't got a clue as to how the murder was committed.
Stay with it, Isabel. After all, we've both had experience with court intrigues in the past, and if we can handle that, we can certainly handle this. Let's face it, compared to some courtiers we've known, those people are amateurs. Now, how do you feel about Dormant? He seems sincere enough.
Yeah, but we've only his word that Visage was with him at the time of the murder. He could be lying.
It's possible. But then again, it's not the kind of thing you'd expect him to admit if it wasn't true.
Right. And if Dormant and Visage are having an affair, that takes away Visage's motivation, doesn't it? I mean, she couldn't be having an affair with Dormant and Blackstone, could she?
It does seem rather unlikely, but we don't know that Visage and Dormant were having an affair. All right, they were both in his room, but Dormant never actually said why. Perhaps they had some other reason for being there.
Oh, my head's starting to hurt again.
The door opened and Catherine Blackstone came in. She looked pale but composed. She shut the door carefully behind her and glanced quickly around the library as though searching for some hidden listener. She looked steadily at Hawk and Fisher and then sank gracefully into the chair before them.
Well, who killed my husband?
We're still working on it. Detective work is a slow process, but we usually get there in the end. There are a few questions we need to ask you.
Oh, right. Go ahead.
Let's start with the events leading up to the murder. You and your husband went upstairs to change for dinner. He went into the bedroom, and you went to the bathroom. You came back and found the door to your room locked. You called to your husband, but couldn't get any reply. You became worried and went downstairs to fetch Fisher and myself. We went back with you, broke the door in, and found your husband dead. Is that correct?
Yes, that's what happened.
Is there anything missing from that account?
No.
Did anyone see you or talk to you on the landing?
No.
It has been suggested that you visited Edward Bowman in his room.
That's a lie. I suppose you've also been told that we're having an affair. I thought so. William's enemies have been trying to use that slander against him for years. Who said it this time? Graham? Oh, no, he's too loyal to William. Visage? Oh, I bet it was that simpering bitch, Visage. She's always had eyes for William, but he hardly even knew she existed. Edward and I have been friends for a long time, but never more than that. I loved my husband and no one else. And now that he's dead, all his enemies will come crawling out of their holes to try and blacken his reputation with the same old lies, in the hope that they can destroy what he achieved.
Who do you think killed him?
I don't know.
Catherine suddenly seemed very tired, as though all the defiance had gone out of her, along with her angry words. She sat slumped in her chair, her eyes vague and far away.
I can't think straight anymore. William had any number of enemies.
Had he quarreled with anyone recently?
Not that I know of. I know he wasn't too pleased with Adam about something, but it couldn't have been that important. William never said anything about it to me.
Who actually invited Stalker to this party?
I did. William didn't bother himself with minor matters like that, but he knew Adam would be here. If we hadn't invited him, it would have been a frightful snub.
Thank you. I think that's all for now. Please wait with the others in the parlor and ask Lord Hightower to come in.
Is that it? Is that all you wanted to ask me?
For the moment. There might be a few more questions later.
Catherine Blackstone nodded slowly and got up out of her chair.
Find my husband's killer. I don't care how you do it, but find him.
Hawk scowled unhappily.
If she is lying, she's a very good liar.
From what I've heard, she was the finest actress in all Haven. In her day, she might be a little rusty after so long away from the stage, but a few lies with a straight face shouldn't be beyond her abilities.
But what if she is telling the truth? Dormant could have his own reasons for lying.
Yes, he could. But one of the unpleasant truths of murder is that when a man or woman meets a violent end, the wife or the husband is usually the most likely suspect. Catherine could have good reasons for wanting her husband dead. Blackstone might have overlooked his wife's infidelity in the past rather than risk damaging his political career with a scandal. But if the affair got too blatant, he'd have to divorce her or lose all respect. You heard what Dormant said. Catherine was fond of her husband, but she loved the money and prestige of being a counselor's wife. As his widow, she could have the money and the prestige, and her lover, too.
Right. And there's a few holes in her story as well. According to her, she went upstairs, went to the bathroom, came back and found the door locked, and then came down to us. And as you said, between her going up and coming down again, there had to be a gap of about 20 minutes. That's a long time in the bathroom. And if she did bang on the locked door and call out to her husband, how is it that no one else heard her? No one else has mentioned hearing her call out. You'd have thought someone would come out to see what was happening.
Yeah. Of course, if you're looking for another front runner, the one thing that practically everyone agrees on is that Blackstone had a big row with Adam Stalker not long ago.
Now that is pushing it. Adam Stalker.
The library door suddenly flew open, and Lord and Lady Hightower strode in. Lord Roderick slammed the door shut, and he and his wife stood together facing Hawk and Fisher. Their expressions were openly defiant.
I asked to see you alone, my lord.
I don't give a damn what you asked for. There's nothing you could possibly have to say to me that can't be said in front of my wife.
Very well. Where were you at the time of the murder, my lord?
In my room, with my wife.
Is that right, my lady?
Of course.
Thank you. That will be all for the moment, my lord and lady.
Hightower looked startled for a moment, and then his face was hard and unyielding again.
I demand to know why I was prevented from examining the body. What are you trying to hide from us?
I said that will be all, my lord. You may rejoin the others in the parlor, and ask Adam Stalker to come in, if you please.
Hightower glared at him. Hawk met his gaze calmly, and after a moment Hightower turned away. He took his wife by the arm, opened the door for her, and led her out. Fisher looked at Hawk.
That's all? What about all the other questions we should have asked them?
What was the point? They've got each other as an alibi, and Hightower isn't going to volunteer any information to the likes of us. Whatever we ask, he'll just say it's none of our business. If he has anything to say, he'll save it for our superiors tomorrow. He wants us to fail, Isabel. That way he can prove to himself that his son's death was my fault after all.
He'd actually risk his friend's murderer getting away?
He knows there'll be a full forensic team in here tomorrow. Once the isolation spell is down and we can file our report, he'll talk to them if he's got anything to say, which I doubt.
The law is on our side. We could compel him to talk.
I don't think so. Hightower's an important man in this city. He may no longer be chief commander, but he still has his influential friends. No, Isabel, anything we learn about Hightower will have to come from other people. He wouldn't give us the time of day if we held a sword to his throat.
Oh, I suppose you're right. The Lady Elaine might not be such a tough nut, though. I'll see if I can get her on her own later. I might get some information out of her, woman to woman.
Worth a try, but don't get your hopes too high.
The door swung open and Stalker stood framed in the doorway. He held the pose a moment and then entered the library, ducking his head slightly to avoid banging it on the doorframe. He sat down facing Hawk and Fisher. Even sitting down, Stalker was still a head taller than either of them.
All right. You've talked to everyone else and heard their stories. Who killed William?
It's too early to say yet.
You must have learned something.
Yes, most of it contradictory. Where were you at the time of the murder, Sir Stalker?
In my room, alone. I don't have any witnesses or an alibi, but I didn't kill William.
Is there any reason why we should think you did?
Someone must have told you by now that William and I hadn't been getting on too well of late.
There was some talk that the two of you had argued about something.
We decided to go our separate ways. William was always too slow, too cautious for me. I wanted to get out there and do things, change things. William and I were always arguing right from the start. We both wanted the same things, more or less, but we could never agree on the best way to achieve them. Looking back, it's a wonder we stayed together as long as we did. Anyway, I finally decided to go off on my own and see what my reputation could do for me at the next election. I think I'll make a pretty good counselor myself. Haven could do a lot worse. It often has in the past. But that's all there was to our quarrel, just a parting of the ways. I had nothing against the man. I admired him, always have. Straightest man I ever met.
So, who do you think killed Counselor Blackstone?
Stalker looked at her pityingly.
Isn't it obvious? William died alone in a room locked from the inside. Sorcery. Has to be.
Gaunt doesn't think so.
I wouldn't trust him further than I could throw him. Never trust a sorcerer.
How long had you known Blackstone?
Stalker stirred restlessly in his chair and glanced irritably at Fisher.
Not long. 2 years, maybe.
Apart from the sorcerer, can you think of anyone with a reason for wanting Blackstone dead?
Stalker smiled sourly.
I suppose you've heard about Catherine and Edward?
Yes. Is it true?
I don't know. Maybe. Women are fickle creatures. No offense intended.
What about political enemies?
He had his share. No one in particular, though.
I see. Thank you, Sir Stalker. That'll be all for now. If you'd care to wait with the others in the parlor, my partner and I will join you in a while. By the way, I gave orders that no one was to go near the body. Perhaps you could remind the others and make it clear to them that I meant it?
Of course. Glad to be of help, Captain Hawk.
Hawk and Fisher sat in silence a while, staring at nothing and thinking furiously.
You know, I think things were less complicated before we started asking questions.
You could be right, Isabel. Let's try and sort out the wheat from the chaff. What actual suspects have we got? It seems to me that Catherine Blackstone heads the list, with Bowman a close second. Either separately or together, they had good reason to want Blackstone dead, assuming they were having an affair. Unfortunately, we don't have any real evidence that they were. Gossip isn't evidence.
Dorman said he saw Catherine going into Bowman's room, but Dorman could have his own reasons for lying, which leaves us right back where we started. So, who else can we point the finger at? I think Gaunt has to be a suspect, if only because at the moment he's the only one who could have committed the murder.
On the other hand, he couldn't have used sorcery to get into the room without Visage knowing.
She did say she was nowhere near as powerful as Gaunt.
True. And just maybe they were working together.
No, Hawk, I still don't buy that. You saw the witch when she was talking about Blackstone. She all but worshipped the ground he walked on.
That kind of worship can be dangerous. If something happened to disillusion her and that worship turned sour.
Yeah, you're right, Hawk. Visage has to be a suspect.
Oh, hell. Until we've got something definite to go on, they're all suspects.
Including Stalker?
I don't know, Isabel. Adam Stalker is a hero and a legend. But like Dorman said, we're all capable of murder if we're pushed hard enough. And Stalker was definitely jumpy all the time we were talking to him.
So, we count him as a suspect?
Yes. He's killed often enough in the past, with good reason. Maybe this time he found a bad reason.
Hawk stretched out his legs before him.
I think we've done all we can for the moment. Gaunt's isolation spell won't wear off until first light, so we're all stuck here for the night anyway. Let's call it a day and yell for some help in the morning. A forensic magician should get us some answers, even if he has to set up a truth spell to do it.
Gaunt could set up a truth spell.
Yeah, I suppose he could. But we don't have the authority to order everyone to submit to it. And somehow I don't see them volunteering. There are some powerful people out there, Isabel. We're going to need some pretty solid backing before we can start pushing them around.
Right. Oh, come on. Let's get out of here. The sooner we face our jovial bunch of suspects, the sooner we can pack them all off to bed, and then maybe we can get a little peace and quiet.
Hawk nodded tiredly. They got to their feet. Fisher started toward the door and then stopped as she realized Hawk wasn't with her. He was standing in the middle of the room, head cocked to one side, listening.
What is it?
I'm not sure. I thought I heard something. Something strange.
He looked about him, frowning, and then his gaze fell on the closed door to his left.
Oh, forget it, Hawk. That's Gaunt's laboratory. It's private and it's locked.
Yeah, and Visage said she found it disturbing.
He moved quietly over to the door and pressed his ear against the wood. Fisher glanced quickly about her and then moved over to stand beside him.
Can you hear anything?
No.
Well, what did you think you heard?
I'm not sure.
Hawk straightened up and stepped back from the door. He frowned and looked thoughtfully at the door handle.
It sounded like a growl or something.
He tried the handle cautiously. It turned easily in his grasp, but the door wouldn't open. He let go of the handle.
Oh, Hawk, there's something strange about that door. I'm getting a very bad feeling about it. But come away.
Nothing to worry about, Isabel. The door's locked.
I don't care. Come away.
Hawk nodded stiffly. He could feel the hackles rising on the back of his neck. Whatever it was he'd heard, it was gone. But still, he knew with absolute certainty that there was something awful on the other side of the laboratory door. Something that was listening and waiting for him to open the door. He stepped back a pace and the feeling was gone. He looked away.
I suppose you're bound to come across a few strange things in a sorcerer's house. Let's get out of here.
Right.
Hawk moved quickly to the main door, pulled it open, and walked quickly out into the hall. Fisher stayed close behind him all the way, her hand on the pommel of her sword. Once out in the hall, they both felt a little ridiculous. Hawk shook himself quickly and pulled the library door shut. When he had a moment, he'd better have a word with Gaunt about his laboratory. He glanced at Fisher and smiled wryly, and then walked confidently forward into the parlor, with Fisher at his side. The sorcerer and his guests looked at the guards with a thinly disguised mixture of politeness and hostility.
Thank you for your patience. This part of the investigation is at an end. Everything else will have to wait until we can bring in the experts tomorrow morning.
Bowman stepped forward a pace.
Gaunt tells us we can't leave the house till morning, because of the isolation spell. Did you order him to cast that spell?
Yes. I couldn't take the risk of the killer getting away, and I had no other means of ensuring that he couldn't leave the house.
But that means we're all stuck here.
That's right. I suggest you retire to your rooms and get what sleep you can.
Are you saying that because of you, we have to spend the night here when one of us may be a killer?
You can always lock your door.
All right, that's enough. It's not a happy situation, I know, but there's nothing we can do about it. If you've got any complaints, you can take them up with my superiors in the morning. In the meantime, I don't think any of us are in any real danger as long as we act sensibly. I suggest you all go to your rooms and stay there. Fisher and I will be here in the parlor all night, on guard. If anyone feels at all worried, they have only to call out, and we'll be there in the time it takes to run up the stairs. If anyone starts moving about, we'll know, so I suggest that once you're in your room, you stay there.
What if I want to go to the bathroom?
Use the pot under your bed.
The guests looked at each other uncertainly. Then Catherine made for the door, and the group broke apart. One by one, the guests left the parlor and made their way up the stairs to their rooms. Hawk signaled for Gaunt to stay behind, and the sorcerer did so. When everyone else had gone, Hawk and Fisher looked steadily at the sorcerer.
What have you got in your laboratory, Sir Gaunt?
Odds and ends, chemicals and the like. Why?
Hawk scowled uncertainly.
I felt something. Something strange.
Oh, of course. I should have warned you. The door has an avoidance spell on it, as a precaution. If you get too close to it, the spell makes you feel so uncomfortable and worried that you daren't try to force open the door. Simple, but effective.
I see. Well, Sir Sorcerer, I think that's all. Fisher and I will spend the night here in the parlor. One of us will always be on watch.
That sounds very reassuring. I'll be sleeping in my laboratory tonight. If you need me for any reason, just call. I'll hear you. Well, I'll see you both in the morning. Good night, Captain Hawk. Captain Fisher.
He bowed politely and left the parlor. Hawk and Fisher looked around the empty room.
We never did get our dinner.
Yeah. It's a tough life in the guard.
Tasha for the first watch.
Your coin or mine?
How well you know me, love.
Edward Bowman sat back in the chair by his bed and looked around the room that Gaunt had given him. It was a comfortable enough room, all told, but the color scheme was a dark, disturbing shade of mauve. It looked like the room had died. Bowman wondered vaguely why the sorcerer chose such an unrelentingly repulsive decor. The man usually showed such excellent taste. On the other hand, Gaunt hardly ever used these rooms. Maybe he inherited the decor from the old days when the house still belonged to the DeFerrier family. Now that was a definite possibility. The DeFerriers had always been strange. Bowman looked again at the clock on the mantelpiece. The clock had a loud, aggressive tick, but its hands seemed to crawl around the dial. Bowman stirred impatiently in his chair. He'd wait another 3/4 of an hour to be sure everyone was asleep, and then, finally, he could go and see Catherine. He frowned thoughtfully. Catherine took the death of her husband pretty badly. He'd known she was still fond of William, even though their marriage had fallen apart, but he'd still been surprised at how upset she'd been.
I wonder if she'd take the news of my death as badly.
Bowman shook his head irritably. He hadn't been jealous of William when he was alive, and he wasn't going to start now the man was dead. Catherine was his, just as she'd always been his. He'd go and see her in a while, and hold her in his arms, and everything would be fine again.
Another 3/4 of an hour. I'll have to be careful there, or Hawk and Fisher might hear me. That might prove rather embarrassing.
Hawk and Fisher. Bowman's mouth tightened. They were going to be a nuisance, he could tell. Damn their impertinence. Of all the guards Dorimant could have chosen as William's bodyguard, he had to pick those two. The only really honest guards in the city. Anyone else would have had enough sense to ask a few polite questions and then step aside and let their superiors take over. Men who understood the political considerations. But not these two. They didn't seem to care how much dirt they stirred up, or who got hurt in the process.
All right, finding William's killer is important, but the cause for which William stood is more important. A scandal now could set reform back 12 years.
Bowman scowled thoughtfully. Maybe he shouldn't have tried to chat up Captain Fisher after all. It seemed like a good idea at the time. It would draw attention away from him and Catherine, and besides, he'd always had a thing about tall blondes. But now he was a murder suspect, and one of the investigating officers had a grudge against him.
Great. Just what I need.
His scowl deepened as he tried to think which ranking officers in the guard owed him a favor or two. There had to be someone.
There was always someone. He finally shook his head and gave up. It was late, and he was tired. He couldn't even think straight anymore. Besides, pulling strings was the last resort. It might not even come to that. As long as he and Catherine kept their mouths shut and brazened it out, no one could prove anything. Let people think what they liked. Without proof, they wouldn't dare say anything. Bowman looked at the clock again.
I'd better not stay long with Catherine tonight. I have to get some sleep if I'm to get any work done tomorrow.
And there was a hell of a lot to be done. With William dead, reform could lose the whole Heights area if someone didn't step into the breach pretty damn quick. Tobias had never made any bones about wanting his old seat on the council back. And with William's last bill still hanging in the balance, there were a great many pressure groups with an interest in that bill, and together they could make or break the man who took over from William. Bowman shook his head angrily. Whatever else happened, Tobias had to be kept out of the council. All on his own, that scheming hypocritical crook could undo everything reform had achieved so far. Someone would have to stand against him at the next election. And who better than William Blackstone's loyal and faithful right-hand man?
But I just can't stand up and announce my candidacy. That would look bad so soon after William's death. No, I need someone else to suggest me. Catherine, perhaps. Only that might look bad, too.
Bowman smiled and shook his head. There had to be a way. There was always a way, if you looked hard enough. He leaned back in his chair and carefully didn't look at the clock again. He could be patient when he had to. He'd learned a lot about patience during his long years as William's right-hand man. Bowman frowned thoughtfully. It was going to feel strange working without William. They'd been partners for so long, but now, finally, he had his own chance to be the front runner, and that felt very good. It was a shame about William's death, but then life goes on. He thought about Catherine, waiting for him to come to her, and smiled.
Life goes on.
Adam Stalker slowly pulled off his shirt and dropped it on the chair by his bed. He was tired, and his back ached unmercifully. He sat on the edge of the bed and felt it give perceptibly under his weight. Damn thing was too soft for his liking. He preferred a hard support for his back. The room was hot and muggy with the shutters closed, but he knew better than to try to open them. Gaunt would have fixed them not to open. The sorcerer worried about assassins. Stalker stretched slowly and looked down at himself. His frame was still muscular, his stomach still flat and hard, but the scars depressed him. The thin white line sprawled across his chest and gut, digging pale furrows in his tan, crossing and recrossing, and finally spilling down his arms. There were more on his back. Stalker hated them. Each and every one was a constant reminder of how close he'd come to dying. Each scar was a wound that might have killed him if he'd been a little slower or a little less lucky. Stalker hated reminders of his own mortality. He looked around the room. Not bad. The dull red color scheme looked grim and disturbing in the light from the single candle, but he didn't mind. He'd known worse in his time, in his travels. He lay back on his bed and stretched out without bothering to remove his trousers or his boots. It wouldn't be the first time he'd slept in his clothes. He'd done it often enough in the past out in the wilds. And he was tired. Very tired. It had been a long, hard day. He stared drowsily at the ceiling, letting his mind drift where it would.
Hawk and Fisher, a good team. They work well together.
From what he'd heard, they'd done a good job on the Chandler Lane vampire. Stalking vampires. That was real work for a man. Not like all this standing around at political meetings he'd have to get used to. Politics. He'd rather face a vampire than another committee.
Maybe I should take a break for a while. Get out of the city and back into the open lands. Into the wilder areas where I belong.
No, that was a younger man talking. Those days were over for him. Sleeping in the rough would play hell with his back, even in this weather. Besides, he had a real chance of taking William's place as the official reform candidate at the next election, if he played his cards right. It shouldn't be too difficult. With his name and reputation, the opposition wouldn't stand a chance. Stalker wriggled himself into a more comfortable position.
If he was going to take over William's place, he'd better start talking to the right people. Not too soon, that would look bad. But leave it too late, and the other people might get in ahead of him. He'd start with Catherine. She'd need some support in the next few months. Though she'd probably be getting enough of that from Bowman. Stalker's lip curled. William should have done something about that, not let it go dragging on.
Man looks after what's his, no matter what. William should have been tougher with her, knocked some sense into her, made it clear who wore the trousers.
Stalker felt tempted to do something about Bowman himself, but he never did.
Never interfere in other people's domestic problems.
He learned that the hard way. Still, Catherine was going to need him a damn sight more than she would need Bowman, for the time being at least. Things were liable to get a bit rough once the various factions in the council learned of William's death. And you could bet there'd be factions jostling for position within the reform cause as well. Catherine was going to need a bodyguard. Stalker smiled sourly. Bowman might fancy himself a duelist, but he'd be damn small use in a back-alley brawl. And Visage might be good at fending off magic, but she'd be no use at all when it came to stopping a dagger thrown from a crowd. No, Catherine was going to need him for a while yet. And he could make good use of her. Unless she decided to go into politics herself.
Damn, she just might. Women don't seem to know their place anymore. That Captain Fisher might look and talk tough, but she'd probably fold in a minute when the going got really hard. Women always do.
Stalker stirred restlessly. The room was swelteringly hot, and he thought seriously about trying to open the shutters. He finally decided against it. Knowing Gaunt, even if he could get the shutters open, he'd probably set off an alarm or something. The whole house was crawling with sorcery. Stalker sneered silently.
Magic.
He never did trust sorcerers. A man should make his way in the world with courage and a sword, not by hiding away in stuffy rooms, poring over old books and making nasty smells with chemicals. All of Gaunt's so-called power hadn't been enough to protect William.
Oh, if only William and I hadn't quarreled. So many things might have been different.
If only. The most futile phrase in the language. Stalker looked up at the ceiling, mostly hidden in the gloom. It had been a long time since he'd last slept in this room. Must be all of 30 years and more. He wondered if Gaunt knew this had once been his bedroom when he was a boy. Probably not. Just one of life's little ironies, no doubt. There was no one left now who knew that Adam Stalker had been born a Defarrier, and that this house had once been his home. Until he ran away, sickened at what his family had become. They were all dead now. Parents, brothers, sisters, aunts, and uncles. All gone. The Defarriers were no more, and Adam Stalker was happy with the name he had made for himself. He closed his eyes.
Get some sleep. There's a lot to be done come the morning.
Graham Dormant paced up and down in his room and wondered what to do for the best. William was dead, and the guards were no nearer finding his killer. All too soon, that slimy little creep Bowman would be angling for William's seat in council. The man was barely cold, and already the vultures were gathering. All right, somebody had to take his place, but it didn't have to be Bowman. And it wouldn't be as long as Dormant had any say in the matter. He stopped pacing and frowned thoughtfully. There was no guarantee it would be any of his business. He'd worked for William, and William was dead. Catherine might well decide she had no more use for him and bring in her own advisors. Losing the job wasn't in itself a problem. Even after his divorce, he should have more than enough money left to last him out. But to give up the excitement of politics, to go back to the empty-headed social whirl of endless parties at fashionable places, the childish fads and games and intrigues.
Maybe Lord Hightower could offer some kind of position. The old man wants to get more deeply involved in politics. He'll need an advisor he could trust. Yes, that might be it. I'll have a word with Hightower in the morning, assuming William's killer doesn't strike again and murder everyone in their beds.
Dormant glanced nervously at his door. It was securely locked and bolted, with a chair jammed up against it for good measure. He was safe enough. The two guards were just downstairs, keeping watch. After the Chandler Lane business, a simple assassin shouldn't give them too much trouble. He frowned uncertainly.
Maybe he should have told them about Visage and what she'd seen. He wanted to, but she begged him not to. Now both he and she were in the position of having lied to the guard.
They ever find out? Oh.
He remembered Hawk's cold, scarred face.
I don't care. I did the right thing. Visage came to me for help, and I gave it. Nothing else mattered.
He hadn't realized before just how important Visage was to him. He sank into the chair by the bed. He knew he ought to go to bed and get some rest, but he wasn't sleepy. It was hard for him to believe that William was really gone. He admired the man for so long, and had been his friend for such a short time. Now, here he was, helping to conceal evidence that might help find William's killer.
I'm sorry, William, but I think I love her, and I can't risk her being hurt.
Lord and Lady Hightower got ready for bed in silence. Lord Roderick sat in the chair by the bed and watched his wife brush her hair before the dressing table mirror. When fully unbound, her long white hair hung halfway down her back. Roderick always liked to watch her brush her hair, a simple, intimate moment she shared with no one but him.
When did her hair turn white? I can't remember.
When they first married, her hair shone a beautiful shade of honey yellow, but that was long ago, when he was still a captain. With something like shock, Roderick realized that that was almost 30 years ago.
30 years. Where's the time gone?
Elaine looked into the mirror and caught him watching her. She smiled, but he looked quickly away. She put down her brush and turned around to face him. She was wearing the white silk nightdress he bought her for her last birthday. She looked very lovely and very defenseless.
Don't ask me, Elaine, please. I can't tell you. I can't tell anyone.
What is it, Rod? Something's been bothering you for months now. Why won't you tell me about it?
Nothing to tell.
Ball, I haven't known you all these years without being able to tell when something's gnawing at you. Is it Paul? I thought you were finally getting over his death. You should never have gone off on those stupid campaigns, the werewolf hunts. I should never have let you go.
They helped.
Did they? Every time some fool jumped at his own shadow and shouted werewolf, you went racing off to track it down. And how many did you find out of all those dozens of hunts? One. Just one. That was why the king made you resign, wasn't it? Not just because you'd reached the retirement age, but because you were never there when he needed you.
Don't.
Roderick squeezed his eyes shut. Elaine rose quickly out of her chair and hurried over to kneel beside him. She put a hand on his arm, and he reached blindly across to squeeze it tightly.
It's all right, my dear. I'm not angry with you. I'm just worried. Worried about you. You've been so different lately.
Different?
Roderick opened his eyes and looked at her uncertainly.
How do you mean different?
Oh, I don't know. Moody, irritable, easily upset. I'm not blind, you know. And there have been other things.
Elaine...
Once a month you go off on your own. You don't come back for days on end, and when you do, you won't tell me where you've been or what you've been doing.
I have my reasons.
Yes, I think you do. You mustn't feel badly about it, Rod. When a man gets to your age, I know that sometimes they, well, start to feel insecure about themselves. I just want you to know that I don't mind as long as you come home to me.
You don't mind? Elaine, what are you talking about?
I don't mind that you have another woman.
Hightower blanched.
You shouldn't look so astonished, my dear. It wasn't that difficult to work out. You have a mistress. It really doesn't matter.
Roderick stood up, took his wife by the shoulders, and made her stand up, facing him. He tried to say something and couldn't. He took her in his arms and held her tightly.
Elaine, my dear, my love, I promise you I don't have another woman. You're the only woman I ever wanted, the only woman I've ever loved. I promise you, there's never been anyone else in my life but you, and there never will be.
Then where have you been going all these months?
Roderick held her away from him so that he could look at her.
I can't tell you, Elaine. Just believe me when I say I don't go because I want to. I go because I have to. It's important.
You mean it's political?
In a way, I can't talk about it, Elaine, I can't.
Very well, my dear.
Lady Elaine leaned forward and kissed him on the cheek.
Tell me about it when you can. Now let's go to bed. It's been a long day.
I think I'll sit up for a while. I'm not sleepy. You go to bed. I won't be long.
Elaine nodded and turned away to pull back the sheet. She didn't see the tears that glistened in Roderick's eyes for a moment. When she looked at him again, having first settled herself comfortably in bed, he was sitting in the chair, staring at nothing.
Rod?
Yes?
Who do you think killed William?
I don't know. I can't even see how he was killed, never mind who or why.
Are we in danger?
I shouldn't think so. Gaunt is on guard now, nothing will get by him. And there's always the two guards downstairs. They're proficient enough at the simple things, I suppose. There's nothing for you to worry about, my dear. Go to sleep.
Yes, Rod. Blow out the lamp when you come to bed.
Elaine.
Yes?
I love you. Whatever happens, never doubt that I love you.
The witch visage lay in her bed and stared at the ceiling. She didn't really like the bed. It was very comfortable, but it was too big. She felt lost in it. She stirred restlessly under the single thin sheet covering her. She felt hot and clammy, but she didn't like to throw back the sheet, not in a stranger's house. She'd feel naked and defenseless. Not that she was in any danger. She'd locked the doors and set the wards. No one and nothing could get to her now. She was safe, but only for the moment. She worked for William Blackstone all her adult life, and she didn't know what would become of her now that he was dead. William was much more than an employer to her. He was her god. He was wise and just, and he fought the forces of evil in Haven. He always knew what to do, and he was always right. And if he hardly ever noticed the quiet young witch at his side, well, that was only to be expected. He dealt with so many important things. Graham Dorimond noticed her. He was always kind to her and said nice things, and noticed when she wore a new dress.
Perhaps Graham will look after me, take care of me.
It was a nice thought. Visage thought of the two guards who'd questioned her and frowned. They were polite enough, she supposed, but they didn't really like her.
I could tell. I can always tell. And Hawk, the one with the scars and the single cold eye, he frightens me.
Visage didn't like to be frightened. She pouted unhappily in the darkness. She told the guards about Catherine and Edward, but they didn't believe her, not really. But all they had to do was start digging, and they'd find out the truth. And then everyone would see what had really been going on.
If the truth ever came out...
Visage scowled. There were a great many people who wouldn't want the truth to get out. After all, it might taint William's memory. Well, she didn't want that, but she couldn't let Catherine and Edward get away with it. She couldn't let that happen.
I won't let that happen. They murdered my William, and they will pay for it, one way or another.
Her hand went to the bone amulet that hung on a silver chain around her neck. She might be only a witch, but she had power of her own, and she would use it if she had to, if there was no other way to get justice for William.
Poor William.
She would miss him very much. She followed him for so many years, and now she would have to find someone else to follow, someone else to tell her what to do. She'd talk to Graham about it in the morning. He liked her. She could tell. The sorcerer, Gaunt, lay on his bed in his laboratory. The air was deliciously cool and fresh. The summer heat kept at bay by his spells. The room was brightly lit by half a dozen oil lamps. For many reasons, some of them practical, Gaunt felt uneasy about sleeping in the dark. He lay on his back and looked slowly around the familiar, crowded room, taking in the plain wooden benches and their alchemical equipment, the shelves of ingredients, all neatly stacked in their proper order. Gaunt felt at home in the laboratory, in a way he never did anywhere else in the house. Gaunt didn't really like the house much, if truth be told, but he needed it. He needed the security and the privacy it gave him, even if he did tend to rattle around in it like a single seed in a pod. There were times when he was tempted to give in to Stalker and sell him the damned house, but he never did. He couldn't. He put forth his mind and tested the wards in and around the house, like a spider testing the many strands of its web. Everything was peaceful, everything as it should be. All was quiet. Gaunt frowned slightly. It worried him that he still had no idea how William died. It worried him even more that the killer had to be one of his guests. There was no way an assassin could have got past his defenses without him knowing. And yet he'd known these people for years, known and trusted them. It just didn't seem possible. Everyone had their secrets, their own hidden darkness. He, of all people, should know that.
Darling.
The voice was soft, husky, alluring. Just the sound of her voice sent little thrills of pleasure through him. But he wouldn't look at her. He wouldn't.
Why don't you call to me, darling? All you have to do is call and I'll come to you. You'd like that, wouldn't you?
He didn't answer. He was a sorcerer and he was in control.
Always the same. You want me, but you won't admit it. You desire me, but fight against it. I can't think why. If you didn't want me, why did you summon me?
Because I was weak. Because I was a fool.
Because you were human. Is that such a terrible thing to be? You are powerful, my sweet. Very powerful. But you still have human needs and weaknesses. It's no shame to give in to them.
Shame? What would you know about shame?
Nothing. Nothing at all. Look at me, darling. Look at me.
Gaunt looked at the pentacle marked out on the floor on the far side of the laboratory. The blue chalk lines glowed faintly in their own eerie light. Inside the pentacle sat the succubus. She looked at Gaunt with jet-black eyes and smiled mockingly. She sat naked and heart-stoppingly beautiful. The succubus stood 5 feet tall, with a disturbingly voluptuous figure and a sensual face. The lamplight glowed golden on her perfect skin. 2 small horns rose up from her forehead, almost hidden among the great mane of jet-black hair. She stretched languidly, still smiling. His old familiar longing began again, just as she knew it would.
Yes, I am beautiful, aren't I? And I'm yours. Anytime you want me. All you have to do is call me and I'll come to you. All you have to do is call to me.
Come here. Come here.
Once more.
Come here, damn you.
The succubus rose to her feet in a single, lithe movement. She stepped out of the pentacle, the blue chalk lines flaring up briefly as she crossed them, and strode unhurriedly over to the sorcerer's bed. She pulled back the single sheet and sank down beside him.
Damn me, my darling. No, you're the one who's damned, sorcerer. And isn't it lovely?
Gaunt took her in his arms, and the ancient madness took him once again.